This Shabbos, we begin to read Sefer Bamidbar. We're just a few days prior to Shavuos, and so I figured maybe we'll just do a bit of a general overview of the Sefer, perhaps what the Sefer tries to accomplish, and maybe the larger picture and message of Sefer Bamidbar. One of the things that's clear, had we had imagine we don't know the end of the story. We don't know what's going to happen next. So one would think that Sefer Bamidbar is going to be this this book full of a celebration, and it opens up with much optimism. They get the Jewish people, they have constructed the Mishkan, end of a Sefer Shmos. Sefer Vayikra is all about laws connected to the Mishkan, the Korbanos, and how to become a holy, sanctified nation as a people. And we learn some of the laws, the end of Vayikra, about the Shemitah and the Yovel, and as we discussed last week, some of the laws governing how property is owned and how to take care of people that are poor in the land of Israel. And so one would think that what's the next thing the Torah is going to share with us? And now the Jews are going to now enter the land of Israel. You would think that's what's going to happen, and it's going to be this this book that's going to describe, hopefully with great fanfare, that arrival and entrance into the land of Israel. And the Sefer, on many levels, does begin with that. We begin with this accounting that that is taken, that this count of the Jewish people. Mefarshim all discuss, you know, why are the Jews counted at the beginning of Bamidbar? Some suggest, based upon the pasuk, it says, Yisrael, from 20 years and above, all that's going to go out, but tzavad can translate as the army. As the Jewish people are about to enter the land of Israel, they're going to need soldiers to fight. They're going to have to conquer the land. So we need to know who's available. How many people do we have available in order to engage in that in those battles, in that conquest? Others suggest that the count is that Hashem is showing how important every person is. Every person is a part of the tzibor, the Jewish people as a whole, are going to now be entering as a nation. The nation is made up of many individual parts, each one contributing what is necessary, what is needed, and then it's one larger unit, and therefore you know, that is that's what's taking place. And then in addition to that, the Torah describes the encampment in the desert with the tribes surrounding the Mishkan that's in the center. And it seems to be on some level, that's even a battle formation, right? You sort of have your different troops and your different infantries and battalions that are surrounding, you know, the Mishkan that's in the middle. On a spiritual plane, it suggests that the Jewish people are hopefully are now going to be focused, that God is in the center, right? The Mishkan's in the center of the camp, and if the Jews remain committed to God and devoted to God, so then they'll be successful. They'll be able to overcome any obstacles, and they'll be able to successfully enter the land and conquer the land and to inherit the land. The Torah describes in our parsha as well the role of the Levium and the special count that was given for Levium. Levium are going to be the spiritual leaders of the Jewish people, and that you need as well. You need your spiritual guides because, after all, a major message is that the Jews will be successful if they cling to Hashem, if they're connected to Hashem, and you have the Levium, that hopefully will keep the Jews focused and the Jews engaged and direct the Jews in a proper path in order to warrant God's protection and God's blessings moving forward. And that's, again, that's a lot of Bamidbar and Parshas Naso. Parshas Naso tells us a couple of laws about the Sota and the Nazir. And then it tells us about the dedication of the Mishkan and the various gifts that the Nesiim gave. And then you come to Parshas Baalotza, and there's a whole bunch of like I think our Soloveitchik once described Parshas Baalotza is just like the final details, a whole bunch of final, you know, little points that have to be taken care of. Laws about the trumpets, how the different signals that would tell the Jews when to move and when not to move. in terms of and signals that were given in the camp, the different we're told about Pesach Sheni, the beginning of Baal Osa. We're taught about lighting the menorah, and finally Moshe comes tells his father-in-law, please join with us. And here he says explicitly, because what is about to happen, right? What is now supposed to occur? Moshe tells his father-in-law the following. This is in Perek Yud Pasuk Chaf Tes. Vayomer Moshe lechovei ben Reuel Amidyani Chosein Moshe Nosnim Anachnu Al Makom Asher Amar Hashem. And we are now traveling to the place that God has told us to share. Etein lachem, the land that I will give you. And the Chai Tanu, please come with us. Veitavnu lach, will be good for you. Ki Hashem diber tov ha'Yisrael. God has spoken very well for the Jewish people. In other words, we're about to enter the Holy Land. Please join us. Come along for this spectacular journey that's about to take place. And so you would think at that point, okay, now the Jews will enter and we can end the Torah and everyone will live happily ever after. And yet, unfortunately, now us knowing what does in fact take place, tragically, that's not what transpires. But a very different reality unfolds. There's a series of complaints and a series of mistakes. The Jewish people seem to revert back to how they were right after they left Egypt, of constantly complaining and not trusting in Hashem, not turning to Hashem, and complaining about food and water, and they don't like the man. And one complaint after the other, and Moshe gets fed up. Moshe can't handle it. And God tells Moshe, "Okay, get these 70 elders to help you out." And then there's this whole unfortunate incident with Miriam and Aaron. Like there's this whole unraveling until finally you come to Parsha Shlach, and everything at that point completely falls apart because then you have the sin of the spies. The Jews, once again, don't seem to trust Moshe and trust Hashem. They want to send spies to spy out the land. And, of course, it results in disaster. And it's such a disaster that what is God's response to the sin of the spies? So we're told the following. This is in Parsha Shlach. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, God says to Moshe, "An ana yinad suni ha'am hazeh. How long will this people provoke me?" All right, it's been now like a year and a half, and they just haven't gotten the message. They're constantly complaining. They don't trust me. They don't believe in me. "An ana lo yaminu bi." They don't believe in me. "B'chol asos shasisi," because I've done constant miracles. God says, all right, God, he did the 10 plagues, and he split the sea, and he brought the man. And he gave the Torah, and he helped them defeat a Amalek. It's been one miracle, one blessing, the well, and they still don't trust me. They don't get it. And therefore God says, "Akenu badever varishanu." And therefore, as a result, God says, "I'm going to destroy them, varishana, and totally annihilate them." That's it. It's over. This isn't working. And Moshe, "I love you," God says. "I'm going to make you a nation. We'll start it over just with you, Moshe." And so at that point, it could have been finished. It could have been all over, end of the story. Just like a few chapters earlier, it could have been the end of the story from a positive sense of entering the land of Israel. Now it's complete 180, totally the opposite. And now God is ready to finish the people, to destroy them. And here's when Moshe really demonstrates his love and his faith in the people. And Moshe responds, "No, you're right. You can't do that. That you can't get rid of them." And Moshe, of course, gives a whole long speech, and he's able to defend and protect the Jewish people. But as a result, right, God says, "Listen, I'm not going to completely forgive them, and there's going to be this process of them now wandering in the desert for these 40 years." And, the generation is going to die out. And so the question then will be, can they redeem themselves? Right? Can they repair the damage? Is all lost, or is there still a possibility that a new generation can arise and they can repair what has taken place. And so the second half of Sefer Bamidbar is all about that. And we know that the Torah, after it tells us the story of Korach and that very difficult period, an incident with that rebellion, and then you get to Parshas Chukas, and all of a sudden the Torah makes a jump. And the Torah jumps from the second year all the way to the 40th year. There's been this long, drawn-out process, and we come to the 40th year. And here I just want to I'll end off with a couple of final points. You come to the 40th year, and it's not like now the Jews get it and they live happily ever after. Because when you get to the 40th year, there's still challenges. There's still a lot of setbacks and mistakes and that the Jewish people make. The Netziv, and I'm sure I've shared this in the past, the Netziv suggests that in his introduction to Sefer Bamidbar, that he highlights and he notes that our rabbis refer to the book of Bamidbar, and in English it's called this as well as Numbers, as Sefer Pikudim, the book of Numbers. Why is it called the book of Numbers? So he says because there's two major countings that take place in the book. The first is our Parsha of Midbar, and then there's a second one that takes place in Parshas Pinchas in the 40th year. And the Netziv suggests, I'm not going to go through all the details now, but he shows several differences in the counts, the way they were made, and he has a theory that what happens during the 40 years in the desert is that Hashem's expectations are lowered somewhat. And Hashem, hoping that the Jewish people, with their emergence from Egypt, are immediately going to have complete faith and devotion and commitment, that's not going to happen right away. That's in fact, on some level, that was almost an impossibility. And the Tziv notes how every time the Jews make these mistakes, and early on the Sefer, they get these terrible punishments because Hashem is expecting so much from them. And so what happens in the 40th year is that you see they're still not perfect, right? There's still going to be things that they're going to do wrong. They're still going to complain, right? They complain there's no water, and that leads to Moshe, right, hitting the rock when he's supposed to talk to to the rock. There's other complaints, and God sends out these fiery serpents. There's the tribes of Gad and Reuven who don't want to enter the land. They want to stay on the east side of the land. There's still lots of things that they don't do right, but Hashem doesn't seek to destroy them like he did at the beginning of the Sefer. So the Netziv suggests that Hashem changed his tactics, as it were, whatever exactly that means. That Hashem had a little bit more of passion, sensitivity, and certainly more patience, and mostly a recognition that that change does not happen instantaneously. That it's you can't go from slavery to immediately to be completely then devoted and committed and faithful to God, but rather it's a process. And so when you get to the second half of the Sefer, it's this constant back and forth between making mistakes, but also doing a lot of positive things. And so you see the beautiful story of the daughters of Tzlathod, who have such a faith and devotion and a commitment to Hashem. You see the and to the land of Israel. You see the Jewish people that they engage in the first battles of conquest on the east side of the Jordan. That they do fight and they fight against Sihon and Og and they conquer those lands. They stumble with the daughters of Miriam after the curses of Balaam, and yet they then battle against Midian. They heed the call of Moshe to wage war against Midian. And so there's not perfection, but there seems to be at least positive movements, positive steps that the Jewish people are taking. And the Sefer concludes with Hashem reviewing the journey, different places where they went, and the whole story, and everything that went along with it. He tells them about the borders of the land of Israel and cities of refuge that they need to set up. And that you see now that again, with it's not perfect, it's not great, but there's a rethinking, and there's a new way perhaps of relating to the Jewish people. And by the time that you get to the end of Sefer Bamidbar, now finally they're ready to enter. They're now ready to to enter the land of Israel to then complete or to begin the great journey and destiny and odyssey of the Jewish people. And it's not what perhaps was originally imagined, but nonetheless, it's the least they're there. And I think one of the takeaways from all of this is a very important lesson in life, because in life, many of us, and especially when you're young, you have these visions of what your life is going to look like, and you have these dreams and aspirations, and and hopefully those dreams are dreams of perfection, dreams of a fairy tale marriage and the most perfect of children and the best job possible and and wealth and riches and honor and prestige and all the great stuff. And that's great that a person has that vision and that hope and those aspirations. But as we get older, we know that life doesn't work out that way. And there's lots of roadblocks and there's stumbling blocks and there's difficulty and struggle and mistakes and then there's things beyond our control and things that are difficult and we know unfortunately extremely painful and hard. But the question is, are you able to continue to march forward? Are you able to still be able to work towards that goal? Are you able to take what life presents and still be able to live a life of meaning and purpose and a life that again is not necessarily straight, it has a lot of detours along the way, but you're continuing to move forward in life and making a life of purpose and meaning. And I would even suggest, and maybe this is also a takeaway the safer, that even those struggles and those painful and very difficult moments that unfortunately we all go through in life, that sometimes those bring us even to a better place than we originally thought. That maybe those fairy tale dreams that we have, they're just fairy tales, but they're not reality. They're not real. But rather, real life is Bamidbar. Real life is struggling through the desert. And having to live with all the challenges that presents, but can you make it to the other side? Can you emerge after a life of many complications that every life has, and look back that it was a life of fulfillment. It was a life of meaning that I made the most of what life threw at me, and that I'm able now to to now come to God as we all will ultimately come to Hashem. And say, Hashem, that I dealt with whatever you threw at me, and I was able to still move forward. And with my head held high, and I made the most of everything, and I remained committed and focused on this ultimate goal, trying to serve you in my life. So I think Bamidbar, shares that very powerful message, and is very reassuring to us, and teaches us that the Jewish people were able to do that. The Jewish people were able to complete that journey, certainly bruised, and certainly and not what they originally had planned, but they also made it to the promised land. And I guess we all hope that we ourselves can ultimately make it to our promised land, and to make it to a life of fulfillment and promise, and ultimately a life in the eternal world where we make it to that great reward that hopefully we'll all be deserving of, through the journey of life in which each of us take. Okay, the life should be smooth moving forward for all of us. Only goodness and blessing and sweetness, and wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos. We're not going to meet, of course, next week because it's Shavuos. Hopefully, we'll resume the following week.